Welcome to Nature's Edge. You got Dale on the radio, and today we're going to do something a little different than what we normally do on Nature's Edge, but it certainly involves nature, and it certainly involves a natural business, if you want. I have a special guest today. I have Miss Troy Ball, and Troy is the first woman in America to found a whiskey distiller in modern times. And after spending several years in the backwoods with moonshine makers, and we're going to talk to her about that a little bit, in Appalachia, she learned the art of making keeper whiskey. And Troy, welcome to Nature's Edge.
Thank you, Dale. I'm so happy to be here.
First thing I got to ask you is, who is Troy Ball?
Well, that's a long story. Troy Ball, mother of three sons, two with special needs, who grew up in Texas and ended up moving to Asheville, North Carolina about 10 years ago to try to keep her sons more healthy. And after coming here, we bought some land up in the mountains because we're land lovers. And the old men decided we were okay, and they started bringing us moonshine.
There you go.
So that was my first time in my life to get offered jars of moonshine. I mean, in Texas, that didn't happen.
No.
So I would open those jars and I'd smell them and they'd like knock me down. And I'd just stash them under the stairs because I wasn't about to drink it. It was just too hot of a product. And I had to admit to Forrest Jarrett, this 80-year-old man who was always bringing me moonshine, that I really didn't like it. And he goes, "Troy, they keep the good stuff at home." And I said, "Forrest, I tell you what, I don't believe there is any good stuff, but if there is and you get your hands on it, I'd be willing to taste it." And it was quite a while. Maybe a year later, he finally shows up with a jar of the keeper kind of moonshine. And he said, "Promise me, Troy, you're going to taste this." I said, "Well, put it over there on the counter for us, and I'll taste it later on." So my sister came over that afternoon. I said, "Trish, here is a jar of supposedly the keeper kind of moonshine. Why don't you try it?" And she said, so she tasted it, and she said, "Troy, this is really actually pretty good. You should try it." And so I did, and I was shocked because, you know what, it was a smooth white whiskey. And that night, I had about five women coming over to my house. They were going to crew for me for this 100-mile race at Biltmore, and they needed to be trained up, right? You're a horseman. You know about this. So I pulled out that jar of moonshine. I said, "Would you ladies like to try some good moonshine, like the kind that doesn't leave the home place?" And they're like, "Well, sure, we'll try it." So we mixed it up with some fruit juices, and they drank the whole quart.
Y'all had a fun time.
It was a big time.
Yeah.
And so anyway, the next day I woke up, and I thought, God, I wonder if somebody's making this good whiskey. I mean, I wonder if it's on the market. And I went down to the ABC store and bought everything available. There were three products at that time. This is 2008. And I brought them home, tasted them, and they were burn you up hot, terrible representations of moonshine, or they were neutral grain spirits masking themselves as moonshine, or they just, you know, you just didn't want to drink them.
Yeah.
So I immediately realized that special product that the old men knew about was not on the market. And so that sort of set me on this path, and it's been a wild and curvy road.
It's amazing. One thing you did say that I do want to talk about, Troy is a horsewoman as well. When you mentioned the 100-mile, people might not know what that is, but that's endurance riding horses.
Absolutely.
Do you still do that?
No, because when I started the business, I had to make the decision that I was going to be all in, you know, focus on the business. And I'm such a natural competitor that I was riding racehorses, endurance racehorses, long distance because I wanted to ride on the U.S. Endurance team. I mean, to me, I had a real goal, and that takes a lot of hours of training, and I knew I wouldn't have that kind of time. So, no, but I'd love to get out on the trails just for a pleasurable ride up there one day soon.
Do you still get to do any of that? You still have some horses?
I have one horse. He's sort of pseudo-retired here in Asheville, and an artist friend of mine takes good care of him. And so no, I don't. Do you have some? I'd like to come ride your horses.
I do.
You do?
Yeah, but they're quarter horses.
I used to ride quarter horses, honey.
You know, and since you're a horsewoman, yeah, I've got one mare that you'd have a lot of fun with. Now she's going to buck a little bit when you first get on her in the morning, just to let you know who she is and if she's still in charge. But then she settles down, and yeah, she's a great ride. Yeah, we'll have to do that.
Yeah,
let's talk a little. So you decided after tasting the good stuff, mm-hmm. that there was a market opportunity or a business opportunity here.
Yeah, Dale, you know what I thought? I just looked at the big picture, and I thought, oh my gosh, there is an American white spirit that is actually really a delicious product that could be used in cocktails. Why are we drinking Russian vodka and Mexican tequila?
Right.
When we could be drinking an American white spirit. So that was really my motivator. I knew that there was something missing in the market. At that time, literally, nobody was making cocktails with white whiskeys.
Right.
Today, we're on Disney property at every resort in Disney, and they told me Disney will never have moonshine, you know, on property because it had such a bad reputation. And I said, well, wait a minute. They need to taste a really well-made product, and they need to understand that moonshine or white whiskey is quintessentially American, just like Disney.
It is, yeah.
And so that was a real struggle, and it's turned out to be a real blessing to me that they were willing to try some of our cocktails.
What is the difference for people that might not know between whiskey and bourbon?
Okay. Bourbon only has three requirements, and they are: you have to make bourbon with a minimum of 51% corn. It has to be stored in a new charred oak container, and it has to be distilled under 160 proof. So note, there is no age requirement on bourbon. Everybody thinks, oh, bourbon's been aged a long time. Not necessarily,
no. Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Only if the label says straight bourbon does it mean it has a two-year minimum aging on it, okay? So whiskey, we're a whiskey product. Actually, we are over 51% corn. We use an old heirloom white corn that survived over here on a farm.
We're going to talk about
We'll get to that.
Yeah.
Okay, but we are distilled over 160. Because you can clean up the spirit at higher proofs, and I'm wanting to take out all the junk and leave just that pure heart from the middle.
Ah.
And that's what the old men did.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I don't know if you ever distilled? You ever made any whiskey? Surely you have.
I'm not going to answer that, but I do understand the process.
You do? Okay, good. Well, it's shocking at the distillery when people come in for tours. I bet 30% of the people have distilled. They'll raise their hands. Yeah, they've distilled. Around here, it's so common.
Oh, absolutely.
But, you know, when you first boil a mash, at the beginning, at low temperatures, as your pot's just getting, you know, to a low boil, all the natural toxins boil off. So you have acetones, aldehydes, methanols, all these things that burn and that give you headaches. So the old men knew this. They would capture the heads, and when the whiskey started smelling sweet and delicious, like it makes your mouth water, the rubbing alcohol nose was gone. Then they would capture 12-quart jars of the clean, pure hearts, and 13th jar was the break jar. After that, they'd collect everything together. Coincidentally, at the end of a distillation, you're producing fusel alcohols, which smell terrible. They're oily. And so they would take the heads and tails, mix them together, and sell them down the road to
yep.
the fools.
Yeah.
And they would keep the hearts for themselves. So these guys were not fools, right?
Absolutely. And we are speaking with Miss Troy Ball today, and Troy is giving us a lesson in whiskey and moonshine and all things that go with that. You have got Nature's Edge on the radio, and we will return after these short break.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Nature's Edge. This is Dale, and we're talking to Miss Troy Ball, and Troy is quite a lady, and she is also the first lady in modern times, and maybe ever, that has founded a whiskey distillery. And Troy, you were giving us a little of the background and all there. Let's talk about sort of how Troy and Sons came about. How did that happen?
Well, it had a lot to do with some old men.
There you go.
You know, really, truthfully, once I decided I wanted to try to see if I could learn to make this this keeper style of moonshine whiskey, I had to go on a hunt to find the guys who made it, you know, and I had to find the guys who made the good whiskey, and that was tricky because there are a lot of guys out there who just make whiskey to sell, and they don't really care about the quality of it.
Right.
And I ended up going around, you know, several states, actually, working and learning from different people. And I came home from one of my last trips, and I said to my husband, I need to build a still. And he said, you are absolutely nuts. We are not building a still. Forget it. And I said, no, really, I'm serious. So I go down and buy a pressure cooker because one of these guys just had a modified pressure cooker, and I chased my husband basically around the house for about 4 months with that pressure cooker. I'd set it down beside him if he was watching TV. I'd set it down beside him in the kitchen. And finally one day I just said, look, we're going to do this. We're going to Lowe's right now. We're going to buy all the fittings. And he reluctantly went with me. And this guy, Michael, that works down at the Lowe's store was so great. He has this long silver beard and he wore, you know, blue jean overalls. And he would kind of shuffle by in his little slow gait, and he'd look at me, and he'd go, I do not want to know what you're doing. And I'd say, no, you don't, but I need you to help me figure out how to make this do this. And we bought the stuff, and then I needed the white corn because the best whiskeys that I had found were always made with white corn. And there was a historic reason for that. Do you know what it was?
No.
Okay. In the old days, white corn is what people ate, and yellow corn was fed to animals, right? So up here in the mountains where you don't have very much tillable land, people were growing white corn because that's what they were going to use for their family food. So they would have been making their whiskey from it, right?
Yeah.
And so I get the name of this man, John McIntyre, over in Old Fort, and I called him, and I said, hey, I understand you have some white corn. I'd be interested in buying some. And he goes, well, sure, how much do you need? I said, well, 100 pounds would be great. He goes, 100 pounds? My God, lady, that's a lot of corn. What are you going to do with it? I said, oh, I just have some recipes I'm working on. And he goes, okay, well, you know, also I can mill it for you. I said, well, what do you mean? He goes, well, I've got a grist mill here, and we can do finer coarse ground corn, and I also have a hammer mill. And I'm sitting there thinking, oh, God, I know I want to try whole corn. I better try some of these because I better make sure that there's no difference in the flavors. And so I said to John, I said, I tell you what, I'll take 300 pounds, 100 this way, 100 that way. He goes, oh, my God, are you the lady that wants to make the whiskey? And I said, yeah. He goes, I tell you what, I'll trade you some corn for some whiskey.
There you go.
And so when I went to pick it up, I realized he's got this great old farm with the corn, and he has an heirloom corn that had survived on his family farm since the mid-1800s.
And that's rare.
That is extremely rare.
Yeah.
And when he told me about it, I said, well, does anybody else have this corn? He goes, well, the such-and-such family used to grow it, but they don't grow it anymore. And so did this family, and they don't grow it anymore. And he goes, yeah, I guess we're the only people left with this corn. And I said, my God, you got a lost corn. You got a grist mill. How about if we make some whiskey out here? He goes, lady, I do not want to get arrested. And I said, I don't either. How about if I file a federal permit, we use your address out here? And he goes, and it's just for the test because I want to come into Asheville with the real distillery. And he goes, if you do that, I'm up for it. But we can't tell anybody because it was a dry county, you know, and
right.
He didn't want to upset the neighbors. We're in the Bible Belt over here, you know. And so I filed the paperwork. It took a lot of time to do that. And he and I started doing test distillations. We spent about a year in an 18 by 21 foot building.
But you're legal now.
Yeah, well, we were
sort
legal.
Of.
We got legal along the way.
Yeah.
And it was just wild because he was so willing to help me work through the testing. You know, we built three different stills in that building. We actually made whiskey in whiskey barrels, cooked it in whiskey barrels. Have you ever done that?
No, but I'm aware of that.
Yeah, it's pretty cool because the distillate comes off smelling and tasting like oak, which is, you know, a shock when you taste that white whiskey and you get that lovely oak flavor. In fact, that's what I took up to Oscar Wong at Highland Brewing Company, and he was like, how are you doing this? I said, well, you won't believe it. I'm going to have a building with about 10,000 whiskey barrels in it and all these stills set up simultaneously in order to do this. And he laughed. He said, Troy, you know, my advice to you is to buy the biggest and best equipment that you can find, highest technology, because I did it wrong when I started Highland, and it took me a long time to get it sorted out. And so that's what I did. We went from a 5-gallon pressure cooker to today we have a 5,000-liter big German still that's incredibly sophisticated. And, in fact, you can control it from your iPhone.
There you go.
So, you know, if I decide to get out on the parkway and take a walk, I can see how the still's doing. It's kind of fun. It's been an adventure. But the guys in Old Fort who came and helped me, no matter what crazy idea I had, if I said to them one day, hey, do you know how to make charcoal? They'd say, oh, yeah, my brother used to make medical charcoal. Mm-hmm. I said, well, I was thinking if we could make some cherry wood charcoal, I'd like to try filtering this whiskey through cherry wood. And I promise you, I walked in there the next day, they had a bag of cherry wood charcoal for me.
Ready to go.
Yeah. And then they're like, how are we going to do it? I said, we're going to go get some, you know, pieces and parts and build a filter. You know, so they were a huge support. I never would have been able to do this without those guys.
Yeah, and, you know, that's a real honor for you that they sort of accepted you into their clan, if you will, to do that.
It absolutely is. And, you know, one of the things I'm most proud of, you know, we've won lots of awards and, you know, gold medals from the Beverage Tasting Institute and all this stuff. But John told me one day he went into the liquor store in Marion, and the guy who was working in there told him the story about this old lady that came into the store, and she was buying a bottle of my Platinum Moonshine. And he says, hey, I haven't tried that. Have you had it before? And she goes, oh, yeah, I've bought several bottles. He goes, well, what's it like? And she says, it's the kind you hide and keep for yourself.
There you go.
I said, all right, we got it right.
And that's exactly what you were going for to do that. So when did you actually start selling? I mean, when did the first bottle come out? We got our permit
in 2010. And our first bottles came on the market in 2011. And that was Troy & Sons Platinum Moonshine. And then later that year, we came out with Troy & Sons Oak Reserve. So we took those Pure Hearts Platinum Whiskey and we aged it in used bourbon barrels.
Mm.
And that product is really it's a beautiful whiskey because it doesn't have lots of burn on it. It's much smoother than normal whiskeys. And it's very much in the tradition of a Scotch or Irish whiskey, more even Irish than Scotch because we're not using peat.
Right.
But it's a lovely, lovely whiskey, and you have to come by and try it.
I will. Very soon, I'll get over there and we'll do that.
Mm-hmm.
So where can people find this stuff?
Well, we're in about 10 states.
I didn't mean to call it stuff. But you know what?
You mean the keeper kind
the
of whiskeys,
kind
the
of
good
stuff.
Kind of
yeah.
whiskeys. We're in 10 states now: North and South Carolina, Tennessee, Florida, Georgia, Connecticut, New Jersey, New York, Colorado, and out in California at Disney. So we're not broadly distributed yet, but also they can get our product online at troyandsons.com.
We're talking to Troy Ball. And Troy, let me ask you just real quick, we've got about 30 seconds here. What's the recommended way for drinking your whiskey?
I love, you know what, I appreciate it just on the rocks, actually.
There you go.
It's so smooth. It's a lovely beverage that served that way. But with the Platinum Whiskey, we make incredible cocktails. Remind me to tell you about the Moonshine Margarita.
We will do that when we come back from the break. This is Dale Stewart. You're listening to Nature's Edge.
I see trouble on
You're listening to Dale. This is Nature's Edge, and I'm having a tough time with Leslie today, as usual. At least she's playing good music today. You know, sometimes she'll get off on that girly stuff that I don't like to listen to. And I probably shouldn't say that, as I'm sitting here with two ladies. And I'm sure I'll get a hard time about that. Those of you who know me know that I have four women in my life who sort of tell me where to be and what to do all the time. But we're talking to Mr. Troy Ball, and Troy, she makes whiskey. And I haven't tried it yet, but I shall very soon get into that. And I was a little disappointed, Troy, that you didn't bring me a bottle. But now that I know where the distillery is, we'll get up there. I'll trade you that horseback ride.
There you go. I think it could be arranged.
Yeah, absolutely. You were talking. We were talking a little earlier about what's the best way to drink your whiskey and. You were about to talk about mixing it with stuff.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that.
Okay, so think about, you can use a white whiskey just like you would use a vodka or a tequila or a rum, right? So same ratio. So if you have a recipe for a margarita, mm-hmm. instead of 2 ounces of tequila, you would use 2 ounces of Troy & Sons Platinum, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so at Disney, the cocktail that has been such a big success there, still is the best seller at Wilderness Lodge, is a moonshine margarita made with Troy & Sons. And it's simple. It's 1.5 ounces of fresh squeezed lime juice, 1/2 ounce of fresh orange juice, 1 ounce of agave nectar, right? 2 ounces of Troy & Sons. And if you want to make it fancy, you can add 1/4 ounce of St. Germain. But if you don't have the St. Germain, it's just fantastic just with those basic ingredients. And stir it up and you will love it.
See, my problem is mixing good whiskey with anything.
I know. I know. And, you know, actually, I enjoy just sipping Troy & Sons on the rocks, the white as well as the Oak Reserve or the blonde. We didn't talk about the blonde.
No. And where did that come from as I look at this blonde lady across from me? But I do know a little about the blonde. But tell us about the blonde. Yeah,
yeah, well, I mean, you know, really, actually, I came up with the name blonde because I was thinking I wanted to make a softer whiskey. And I actually trademarked the name blonde whiskey before Starbucks came out with their blonde coffee. Right? Because that was the idea of the blonde coffee, you know, a smoother coffee, less acid and all that. But the blonde whiskey is also made with white corn, but it has the inclusion of an heirloom turkey red wheat, which we grow over in Old Fort. Turkey red wheat was the wheat that started the breadbasket in America. It was brought over by the Mennonites, and it nearly became extinct. It was saved by some farmers up there. You can't buy it very easily on the open market, so you have to grow it, and that's what we do. The blonde whiskey is then aged in new barrels, so it goes much more in the direction of a bourbon. And if you're a bourbon drinker, you might want to try the blonde.
Okay.
I mean, you can't go wrong with a blonde, right?
I will not answer.
No, I'm just teasing.
Because I'm married to a redhead.
My son's a redhead.
All right.
Well, I love redheads. Well, anyway, the blonde whiskey is very smooth, exceptionally smooth. And so it's a lovely whiskey for people who are new to whiskey drinking, because so often when they take a sip of whiskey, it burns so badly they don't want to have another sip. And for people who are whiskey drinkers, when they taste the blonde, some of them just convert instantly. They go, you know what? Why am I drinking that stuff? I could be drinking a really nice smooth whiskey. So it's our blonde whiskey's been aged 2 to 3 years, and if you come up to the distillery,
in barrels,
yeah, big,
are they,
53 gallon charred oak barrels.
Okay.
Yeah, and these barrels are actually honeycomb barrels. They have honeycomb patterns cut on the insides of the staves, which gives you all this extra access to the end grains of the wood and the sugars in the wood. And so when they char the wood, you actually are creating that. You're creating this the sugars to become caramelized, and that's why the whiskeys will have this lovely caramel vanilla flavor to them.
That, I mean, it sounds great. I'm going to have to just come up there and plan to spend the day, because I'll...
Yeah. You can help us taste some. You know, what's fun is to come up and let us open a new barrel, and you can taste it at high proof. You know, we barrel at about 128 proof, So the whiskey comes off the still at, 180, and then we proof it down with mountain water to about 128, put it in the barrels, and then we age it that way.
I was going to – people that know me know I'm a big water guy, not only from all my paddling I've done, but I do a lot of water conservation stuff. So tell me the importance of water to your process.
Water is really critical. You know, in Asheville, we're blessed with great water.
Yes.
And I think that's part of the reason why Sierra Nevada, New Belgium, all the big beer people have shown up here, because we've got great mountain water, a clean reservoir up here. We still filter the water that we bring into the distillery, because the whiskey will, the fatty acids in the whiskey will bind to the minerals in the water, and that'll cause some flocking or hazing in the whiskey, which this is the sort of stuff you have to learn about.
Yeah.
Once you get into this. But the water is really, really important. I think that's part of the reason why the whiskeys are so nice.
Is that water. Yeah, it seems to make a big difference. Mm-hmm. What really, Troy, what defines a craft spirit?
In my mind, a craft spirit is a product that is made by hand in a pot still, that not at large volume. In other words, it's not an industrialized process. It's not a process where you're using continuous distillation column stills and they're constantly feeding mash in and constantly taking distillate out, and you can't cut anything. So in a craft distillery, you are actually working batch by batch. You can decide how to cut your spirits, heads or tails, out or not, which most people don't, because it's alcohol they can sell.
Sure.
And it's a smaller volume. I mean, we only can make 3 barrels of whiskey on a distillation. So that's not very big.
Yeah.
Now, what's happening is the big guys, the big distilleries, are they are trying to present themselves as small batch. And they're putting it right on their bottle, small batch. I'm like, and then you look on there, it's like, 10,000, this is from barrel number 10,000 or what. Yeah. It's just kind of crazy. And it's a lot about fooling the consumer. And that's one of the big struggles for craft distillers, because we've got this competition.
Yeah.
Not that it should matter. I mean, none of us sell enough to influence the big guys at all. But we are true small batch, distillers.
Yeah, you are who you are.
Uh-huh.
Let me ask you, there's a lot of discussion, a lot of controversy about glutens.
Mm-hmm.
Is whiskey gluten-free, or is your whiskey gluten-free, or is it?
Troy & Sons is for sure gluten-free because it's just made with white corn. Now, I have, and we've been asked this, and we've done a little research. It's my understanding that gluten doesn't transfer through the distillation process, okay? But if you want to be positive you're gluten-free, drink Troy & Sons.
Yeah,
Jake,
there you go. That absolutely is a good answer.
Yeah, there you go.
So, well, if I drink that, what makes your whiskey stand out or makes it different from other whiskeys?
Well, first of all, you're not going to get a headache.
There you go.
I mean, it, because you're just drinking the hearts.
Because Leslie comes in some mornings with a headache. So
she does? My gosh, Leslie, we got to get you on the right product. No. And also, I think what you'll find is because this Hearts whiskey is so smooth, if it's made into a cocktail, if you make an old-fashioned, with the aged whiskey with the Oak Reserve, or you make a margarita or any kind of a shaken, beautiful cocktail, the cocktail itself is more beautiful because you don't have the burn. You don't have all the contaminants that you get even with vodkas.
Yeah, but you keep talking about all these girly drinks, and to me, you just got to enjoy it the way it comes out of the bottle.
Yeah, there you go. Well, you know what? You're going to love it. If you like to drink straight whiskey.
Yes, I do.
Okay, you're going to love it, I promise you. I owe you a bottle.
You owe me
or
several.
Or two or three.
Yeah, or more.
I want you to have at least one bottle of each. I'm going to bring
you. Got
it.
This is Dale Stewart, Nature's Edge. We're talking to Miss Troy Ball and learning about whiskey and about Asheville distilling. And we will be back after these messages, and I'm going to talk to Troy a little bit about some of their conservation efforts and buying local.
With ice cold hands taking hold of me. Well, I am death, none can excel. I'll open the door to heaven or hell.
Welcome back. This is Dale, and this is Nature's Edge. We are talking with Miss Troy Ball, and Troy is the first woman in America to found a whiskey distiller, at least in modern times. And she's been telling us all about whiskey and how it's made and the products and everything else. But I know something that's near and dear to a lot of my listeners to Nature's Edge. We want to talk a little bit about conservation and any conservation efforts that you guys are involved in. And then I also want, Troy, you talk a little bit about purchasing the products that you make your whiskey out of local.
Absolutely. We are big proponents of buying locally grown or growing our own. And we work with area farmers. What we're doing now is we're actually going to other farmers and contracting with them to grow our old Crooked Creek corn. And so that's good for them. It's good for us. And then we buy our other white corn from local growers as well. So we try to use as much of local produce as we can here in our whiskeys. But my husband and I, Charlie, we've been involved in conservation efforts for about 15 years. And I'm happy to say over those years, we've probably conserved about 700 acres so far in Texas, Montana, and now in North Carolina. And we have a real soft spot for preserving the land and doing what we can to preserve the land. In some cases, we've kind of riled up a neighborhood because we wanted to be able to put a piece of property in easement. But in order to have that process go smoothly, with the IRS, because of the tax benefits of doing so, you have to get a plat.
Yes.
You know. So unfortunately, we would have to go. We did a 600-acre development up here outside of Asheville, and we wanted it to become a conservation track, but we had to plat it, and that really upset everyone in the neighborhood. I mean, all the people showed up in Marshall at the county courthouse to protest, and we couldn't say, guys, we're really not going to develop. We're just doing this for the fun of it. It was not fun.
Yeah.
It was painful. But it allowed us to sell four tracts off at 100 acres each to individuals who put the property in easement. And because they were then foregoing legal lots, right, they were able to take about $1.5 million tax deduction over time.
Right.
And so it was a win-win.
It was
a win for the land. It was a win for the wealthy people who were trying to shelter some.
But it is an education process because when you start talking about even the word development, especially in Western North Carolina, they really come out of the woodwork.
Yeah, and I don't blame them.
Yeah,
I believe in conscientious development, in green development. We did do a development west of town called Whisper Mountain, and it is very green. Any timber that was cut on the property, we brought a sawmill on site, and then we milled the timber, and we ended up using it on the lodge on the property. We always go underground with all utilities, and we made the engineers designed this property to have 160 lots, and I think we have about 50. So, that's how land should be developed if it's going to be developed, not raped, but consciously thought about and planned. So Charlie and I do that. Just in December, we sold a 175-acre tract that is going into conservation, which I'm really, really happy about.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Good for you. And also, I want to talk to you a little bit about the you say working with local farmers to grow the corn.
Yes.
And so that's kind of neat. I mean, I've got some land. I'd be willing to grow corn in exchange for finished product.
Y'all, there you go. Now, you sound like my old friend John McIntyre.
Yeah, we can.
We can work that out for
absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely. We can work something out there.
The other thing we're doing, which you might be interested in, is we're full circle.
Uh-huh.
So we raise this corn or buy it from the local folks. We use the corn in our mash in the distillery. Then we take our mash and we feed it to a herd of very rare American mulefoot hogs.
Oh.
And they were the premium ham hogs in the early 1900s.
Yes.
In fact, they survived on an island in the Mississippi River. You know about
it? They did. I sure did.
Yeah. And so they believe they're left over from the Spanish Iberico hogs. They're black and real gentle hogs. And so we are raising whiskey pigs pork.
There you go.
And you'll find it around Asheville in some restaurants.
There you go. The hog is kind of like the horse, you know, the Spanish.
Yes,
both.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And think how the horse changed the Native Americans' lives.
Absolutely.
I mean, that was made all the difference, really.
And bacon has certainly changed my life.
And bacon. We can't go wrong with that. And I tell you what's really interesting. When we sold our first couple of hogs to the Biltmore Estate, the chef over there's like, I don't know what's going on. I said, what do you mean? Because I'm nervous about this, right? I mean, this is an important account to me. And he goes, well, there's like no lymph glands on these hogs. I've been butchering hogs, you know, for 20 years and never seen this. And so I said, I have no idea.
Don't have an answer.
So I said, let me call the professor at the university. And I called the swine specialist. And I said, you know, our hogs, the chef can't find the lymph glands. And he goes, well, let me tell you something. Those hogs are so healthy. They're under no immune stress. I said, okay. He says, they're there. They're just minute. And I said, why do you think this is happening? He goes, it's probably that 2-3% alcohol in the mash that's killing the bad bacteria. So we've got very happy hogs and very healthy hogs.
And so, folks, whiskey is good for you.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been telling my wife and friends that for a long, long time. So you've really, I mean, you've taken this old world corn, if you will, and the heirloom corn, and so you've really sort of helped bring it back.
Absolutely. And we actually take the Crooked Creek corn and we mill it, and we sell grits. So some of the, like, Mass General Store and some of these, you know, accounts around to sell our Crooked Creek corn grits as well. To me, it's about saving those old traditional things, using the heirloom grains, working with the area farmers, and then doing the logical thing. The logical thing is, let's use our waste.
That's great stuff, and as soon as Troy turns her phone off,
sorry about that, guys.
I do that all the time. Leslie does that often. In fact, she'll even have a conversation sometime on the phone while we're trying to record Nature's Edge, but sort of the beast. Troy, it's been a pleasure having you. Again, kind of tell us where people can find your whiskey.
Well, you know, you can find our whiskey in liquor stores in 10 states, Florida, North and South Carolina, Tennessee, Georgia, Connecticut, New Jersey, New York, Colorado, and out at Disney in California. But importantly, you might see us on the Moonshiners TV show. I've been on this season with Tim Smith.
Yes.
And Tim actually showed up at the distillery 3 years ago, came to my back door, and sadly I didn't recognize him. I think he was very disappointed. And anyway, he said, I'm trying to find a place to produce my whiskey. Would you be interested? And I said, well, you know, I'm just getting off the ground here. I don't know if I'm ready to take that on. And so he kept coming around year after year. And then this year we felt like we had the capacity to do it. And so we produce his product at our distillery. And he said, look, I'd like you to be on the show. This is part of my real life and what's going on. And so if anybody wants to watch the reruns of the Moonshiners, you can actually see the distillery.
I will. Well, I'm going to see it in person.
Yeah, I know you are.
And, you know, Troy, gosh, I see a Nature's Edge whiskey in our future.
There you go. Now, this can be arranged, Dale.
we can
actually,
work that
it
out.
Should happen.
Yeah,
it would be great.
I have companies approach me all the time about licensing products, but I think we may have something.
This would be fun. And you could take it on all your adventures around the world and shoot that bottle wherever you are. That'd be fun.
You know, we can do that. I've got some coffee sponsors that we do ads for occasionally, and they always want me to have that picture of their bag sitting on that log or sitting on the front of my boat. It's been a pleasure having you, Troy.
Well, I've enjoyed it so much.
Gosh, we're going to have you back and talk about horses.
Talk about horses next time.
We'll absolutely have to go riding. This is Dale Stewart with Nature's Edge. Until next time, my friends, I hope to see you in the wild.